Welcome to the Hobby of a Lifestyle podcast, a show that looks at how our passions impact lives and drive career choices. I'm Andy Gray, a former national and world champion kickboxer. During my shows, I'll be talking with athletes, coaches, fans and more as I delve into their world to find out what inspired them on their journey. Welcome to Hobby of a Lifestyle. This week, I'm joined by the CEO and founder of Ventum Racing, Dia Noor. Dia takes us through his journey from growing up in Switzerland and running with his dad before moving to America and eventually starting his own company after college. This journey led to him becoming the CEO and founder of renowned bike company, Ventum Racing. Let's find out the whole story. Good afternoon, Dia. Welcome to Hobby of a Lifestyle today. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, no, thank you very much for coming on the show. Dia, do you just want to tell listeners what exactly your passion, your hobby, your career is right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, I'm the founder and CEO of Ventum. Ventum makes high-end bikes, all carbon fiber, really geared towards performance. Okay. We started in the triathlon space and then moved into the road space. And now our latest offering is in the gravel space.
Wow.
So that's definitely my passion and also my job right now.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And that's what this show is all about, just discovering how you made your passion into a job and into a career. But if we go right back to the very beginning, dear, as a child, what kind of sports and what things were you into hobbies-wise?
Wow, that's a really good question. As a child, so I grew up in Switzerland, in the French-speaking part of Switzerland, in Lausanne. And, you know, I was probably playing soccer or football, as you would call it. I wasn't any good at it. But one of the things that I will say is I've always had a very good engine for endurance. In fact, when I was young, my father used to take me on runs, and I can't remember exactly how long they were, but I do remember they were way too long to take a small child on. And I remember people saying, like, how is he keeping up? Because, you know, when we're kids, we like sprint 100 meters and we fall on the side. And that's it. And then we get up and we sprint another 100 meters. And that wasn't the case. I mean, it was like a steady pace. My dad ran every day, you know, miles and miles and miles. And so that's when I knew I had kind of this this knack for endurance events.
So it was really young.
Wow. Yeah.
So was it something you pursued as a child, or was it just still playing football, soccer with your friends?
Yeah, it was just football, soccer with my friends. And then when I came, I moved to the US when I was 12 years old, roughly.
Okay.
Then I actually kept playing soccer and football, but then I started running cross country.
Okay.
You know, and so I started getting a bit more organized and on kind of my endurance journey. And actually, before cycling became a passion, because that came in later down the line, it was running. Running has always been my passion. So marathons and ultra marathons, and so
I know, kind of like looking up the sky when you see ultra marathon. I tried an ultra marathon a few years ago with friends. Here in the UK, we did a 69 miles and 24-hour ultra marathon challenge.
Amazing.
Well, after you've finished it, it's amazing. At the time, it's the most horrific. And I'm not designed for running, dear, at all. So we kind of undertrained for it, but absolutely loved it at the same time. The experience was amazing, but it's the hardest it's the hardest thing I've ever done physically, mentally, emotionally, ever. So anyone who runs them and enjoys them and does it regularly, my hat is truly tipped.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I will say this when it comes to endurance running, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
And I look at some of the times and performances I've done for the first time I did it was always the best time. Because I think you come back and you know the pain, you know the mental and physical demand that this is going to take. Yeah. And I think it's a little jarring.
You guys who do those as a profession or just to constantly test yourself, it's phenomenal. It's very good doing it once just to say you've tried it, but for you guys who do it all the time, it's a different level.
You know, in some sense it becomes an addiction, a healthy one, but it does become a bit of an addiction. So I can totally
get that. So you're running marathons and long distance in school. Was running something that took you on a scholarship in America and into college, or was it?
No, not so much. You know, when I went to college, I think my athletic career kind of came, not to an end, but took a hiatus. Yeah. And I did what typical college kids do in the US, at least.
I think it's the same in England.
Exactly. So that, you know, that's probably the period in my life where I think I exercised, and where sports was really missing, a missing part of my life. I put on a lot of weight. I think, we can talk pounds. I usually sit anywhere between 165 and 175 pounds.
Right.
In college, I got up to like 220.
Wow.
So I was a big boy.
Yeah.
I was a big boy, you know, and to try to run at that weight sometimes can be a bit cumbersome with the knees and the ankles and the back. And so college, it was not a huge athletic moment in my life. But then when I graduated, I got back into the running, and then that's where I picked up the cycling. So I started cycling really in my 20s. Of course, I cycled as a kid, as we all did, but I'm doing like serious cycling where I would actually go out for more than enjoyment, also for a form of exercise.
Okay.
Was after college, in my
What brought
20s.
You back to that? And you've talked quite passionately about running there, and that was always part of your life from being a young boy, and something that your dad had kind of instilled in you, something that you did together. But what made you come back to that after college?
My brother. Okay. So my brother and I are extremely tight, extremely close. And it was about 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. My brother tried triathlon. Okay. And my brother's always been an incredible athlete and really fell in love with triathlon and decided that he was going to become a professional triathlete. And so he quit his day job. Talk about following your passion, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And just give it a go. And so, you know, his positive energy and, you know, seeing him really flourish in the sport and losing weight and everything, just like it had such a positive impact on his life that it was so attractive to me, right? So I quickly went and he encouraged me, you know, to get my first bike. And that's really where I started really enjoying the cycling. Fast forward a little bit. At the time, I started dating a four-time world champion triathlete. So she was also in the sport. Wow. And so, actually, she's British, funny enough. So, and so that also was, an extra motivation. So all of a sudden, I found myself surrounded by cycling in one way or another. I still run. I'm still constantly running. But like that's where I really caught the bug. And never look back.
Okay, wow. So you're talking about you've caught the bug for a second. What did you major in at college?
So I had a double major, international economics, focusing on the Middle East, and international relations, focusing on developing countries.
Okay.
So really not using my majors whatsoever.
Yeah, that was why I was going with that. I was wondering if you had, looked at something in sport, if you'd done business and whatnot, but no, it was totally the other side of the coin.
Yeah. And even before, so I've always kind of worked for myself since I was maybe 20 some years old. And I used to own an IT and telecom company.
Right.
And so I had nothing to do with sport, right? It's all technology. And then in 2014, I sold the company to another large publicly traded company. And that's when I decided I am going to do something in the endurance sports industry. Wow. And I started looking at maybe creating events or something down that road. And then this opportunity came by. It was not called Ventum at the time, but these Australian engineers had been working on making the world's fastest triathlon bike. That was a little pet project. And there were Australian engineers that worked for Boeing and the Australian Air Force. Wow. And so they're really, really big aerodynamicists. And so they were showing me this concept. It's like, we're going to make like 30 or 40 of them and we're going to give them to our friends. One of the engineers, Peter Sears' son and daughter were professional triathletes. They went to the Olympics. So it was like, it was a project near and dear to their heart. And so I saw it. I said, wait, what? 30, 40 to our friends? No, we got to take this to market. So I just gotten out of an IT company and didn't really, know what to do. And I just dove right into this new project, which eventually became known as Ventum. So, so it was really nice. And I think one of the special things about this partnership at the time was that I really knew very little about the technical side of cycling, and producing these high-end bikes. But I knew a lot about starting a company.
Yeah, of course.
And so it was a really nice marriage, to be able to do that. So I came in kind of with the funding and the business sense, and they helped out a lot on the technical side. Wow. And yeah, fast forward Q4 of 2014, Ventum is born.
Wow, that's amazing. So if I just kind of go back a little, because I definitely want to find out more about Ventum. Are you competing at quite a high level now than before Ventum came along? Because you talked about how passionate you were about sighting, you caught the bug and that you were doing, but were you actively competing and actively competing at a high level?
At a higher amateur level. But definitely never compete as a pro. I think that takes a level of dedication that is hard to be able to do and do something else, right? Yeah, so whether it's my IT company or my job or whatever it is, it is a full-time job. Like I watch my brother train 40 hours a week. So, but I did compete at a higher level. I was also more like the guy that did the crazy things. Like I did a 100-kilometer run through the desert of Egypt,
wow,
which was insane. I run my age every year on my birthday. So I turned 40 in September. So I ran 40 miles around New York City. Wow. And I think one of the toughest things I've done was last summer, I ran the Grand Canyon in the US, which is, it's 50 miles.
That's impressive.
It was 120 degrees.
Yeah.
But the toughest part is it's a 22,000 feet of vertical change.
Wow.
So that really, really crushed me. So when you say that, did I compete at a high level? Yes, I would say a few people have done those events, but I wasn't winning like half marathons, right? I didn't show up to the New York City Marathon and come in top 20. That was not me.
No, just the fact that you're competing and you'd compete. What makes you want to do these challenges that you keep challenging yourself with?
It's a really good question. You know, I think at first it was strictly a weight management and stress relief tool.
Yeah.
As I got older, I'm not talking about when I was in high school, like as we get into like real society and work and all the stresses of life at home and at work, I think that really that's what attracted me to it first. But it's changed. It's changed. It's no longer about weight loss or mood boosting. It's like I said, it's almost like a healthy addiction. It's a drive. It's something. It's very difficult to explain, actually. But it's something
I think
that
I get that.
Do you?
Yeah, I think I do. Like I think
I have to do.
Yeah, I think you can do. You know, we're fortunate here in the northeast of England. We have the biggest half marathon in the world every single year, the Great North Run.
Wow!
And everybody in the northeast who wants to try a half marathon will at some point try that.
Yeah.
But what's the next progression from that? Do you then go and do the London Marathon? And once you've done the London Marathon, what did you? So I agree. I think it's always looking for something, not always bigger and better, but just something a bit different. And how can you challenge yourself rather than doing the same things that are quite commercialized now, I suppose.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that's running the Grand Canyon's commercialized. I imagine there's not a lot of people signing up to do that, except for the people who really want to push themselves and challenge themselves.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
I understand it definitely in about, massively. So I'm kind of digressing, but let's get back on track. So Ventum was born. You've got a very good understanding of what a bike should feel like, what it should look like from a rider's perspective. Obviously, maybe it's not the technical side, but you've got all the business side of it. How did that opportunity actually present itself to you? Then was it just because you were in and around the sport and because you had this business acumen already?
Yeah, I would say honestly, it was a simple case of right place, right time.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'd exited a business, I had disposable income, I was looking at a new opportunity in that field. One presented itself. I mean, all the stars really, really aligned.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that being said, I think I completely underestimated how big of a project this was going to be. Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, these bikes go upwards of $16,000-$17,000. Yeah. They're extremely complex.
Yeah.
So the R&D is very expensive. Even inventory. And think about holding these bikes, right? I mean, of course, we're not paying $15,000, $16,000 for them, but we're not paying, pennies either. So you have millions of dollars and millions of dollars tied into inventory and millions of dollars tied into R&D. And that's before you even start, breaking into the market, right? So your marketing, your branding, your getting people to try your product and understand who you are. That's before you even you start any of that. So if anything, I always go back to ignorance is bliss. I definitely underestimated how massive this project was going to be.
Was there ever a point in the project where you just thought, I'll cut my losses now, I'll walk away from it? Or was it always something, now that you got into there and it was something that you were looking to do anyway, was it something that actually, regardless of what the outcome is, I'm really going to push on here and I'm going to make this work?
Every day, there's a small percentage of me and sometimes a bigger percentage of me that says, you know, what am I doing?
Yeah, of course.
Because it is hard. It is really, really, really difficult to penetrate this market and to do what we're doing as a small brand. You know, you've got Trek and Specialized and Giant that are billions and billions of dollars worth of companies, right? Yeah. And here we are trying to tell people that we can do it better or as well as they can. And that is a very big, big task. So I do believe in myself. And I think at the end of the day, you know, it shapes you. It shapes you. I mean, I've learned so much. Like, I used to be in IT and telecom. I was not in the public eye. So whether I did a good job or a bad job, you know, I only disappointed myself to some extent. No longer the case, right? You are in the spotlight and people are resistant to change. So early on, the Ventum One, which is our flagship triathlon bike, looks very different than any other triathlon bike. It's built from the ground up in the wind tunnel. It's all about aerodynamics and it doesn't follow UCI rules. So it looked different.
Yeah.
You could say it looked weird, right?
Okay.
Now it doesn't. Now it's beautiful. And now, you know, so many other big brands are emulating that style, which is great, right? The comments that you would get online and in person and whatnot can shake you up and can make you, you know, second guess yourself.
Yeah, I can imagine. So
that was very difficult for me. I had to develop a very thick skin, which I didn't have prior to this, honestly. Because again, no one's complaining about my IT services to me on a forum, right? But cyclists like to be well informed and like to express their opinions a lot, especially triathletes more than cyclists. Right. And so as we were launching, we had a big, big uphill battle when it comes to just, you know, the consumer acceptance.
And why is it you think that you've now been accepted and you're now pushing on with the brand?
Why am I still doing it?
Why do you think you're now being accepted? Is it because you can kind of justify by saying, well, actually we've got the best technicians in the world working on this, the best engineers in the world, you know, who work for Boeing, they do this, they've worked in aerodynamics, you know, we're not peddling some sort of Mickey Mouse product. This is the real deal. This is going to get the best performance.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. Well, I think obviously a lot of people started adopting the triathlon bike.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, we have a great partnership with Ironman. We're the official global bike of Ironman. The only company to ever do that. But that does give some credibility.
Yeah.
And then we got some early adopters that were pretty influential and on the tri side started pushing. And then we cemented ourselves as a very serious tri brand, which was fantastic. You know, we had to almost start from scratch when we launched the road bike, but same thing happened. You know, the road bike, which is the Ventum NS1, just got awarded best bike of 2021 by Bicycling Magazine, which is a huge honor. They pick very few amount of bikes and test hundreds. Wow. So we're on the best bike 2021 list, which was a huge honor again. So once you've got some momentum behind you, it does become a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then on the gravel side, the gravel is kind of the wild, wild west. There is no king of gravel per se right now. There's no brand that dominates that space.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot easier of an entry for us than the other two verticals. But now, the momentum is with us. I mean, look, we all have issues, right? I mean, right now it's a supply chain issue with our components manufacturer like SRAM and Shimano. That's our new elephant in the room. But I think the momentum really helped carry us through and push through a lot of the doubters.
I mean, as I said, just prior to filming, I'd spoke to a couple of different triathletes and Ironman athletes. And then obviously because I like them on social media, other posts come up and Ventum was one of the ones that kept on coming up. And then I came across yourself and I was like, wow, I need to speak to this man just to find out what was his drive, what was his journey. And then I seen, it was only within the last 2 days, I think Chris Nikich is now he's now writing the Ventum as well.
Yes.
So that was,
I love Chris.
I'd seen that. I thought, I was trying to speak with Chris, but unfortunately, it was just before he'd done the Ironman. before he completed Ironman. And then his diary just went crazy busy, and fair play to him. He deserves every accolade and all the attention he's getting. So it was just a case of, well, you never know. Maybe in the future I'll get a chance to chat
with him. I hope so. Yeah, no, we had to design, you know, a specific, not so much a specific bike. We had to customize a whole bike for him. And because, you know, the position is different and he needs to be comfortable. And so it was actually a really interesting challenge, but he's loving it. It's so great to see. I got a chance to go cycle with him about a month ago in Florida, and what a strong athlete. I mean, it was incredible to see what he's accomplished. So I can't wait to see his journey to Kona. It's going to be amazing. He's going to try to do the world championships this year.
That's not far away now, is it? I don't think.
Oh, a second Saturday of October.
Oh, so it's still a few months away. Okay. I thought it was sooner for some reason, but is that an event that obviously you get to attend?
Yeah. So obviously last year was canceled, but prior to that, the last 10 or 11 years, it's something that we attend and we support greatly.
Yeah.
That's, it sounds like it's going to happen this year. So we're excited.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Moving forward, Ventimore, you've already said that the pandemic has, contrary to what people may believe, is kind of hit the cycling industry pretty hard.
Very hard, very hard. So essentially, obviously, the pandemic has really brought some attention to cycling.
Yeah, of course.
There's a cycling boom. Now, the cycling boom specifically helped kind of entry-level bikes more than kind of performance bikes.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
Our entry-level, if I can even call it that, starts at $3,000, which is not usually what someone would spend on their first bike if they just want to go commute around and whatnot. So, you know, the ones that the bikes that are $800 and less really got cleaned out.
Yeah.
It is true that we saw an uptick in sales. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But what happened is the component manufacturers like SRAM and Shimano have had a horrible supply chain issue. And it was compounded by a couple of things. One is no one predicted that the pandemic was going to increase bike sales.
Yeah.
Quite the opposite. I think everybody was thinking like, well, who's going to buy a $5,000-$10,000 bike when people are out of jobs and whatnot. So a lot of the big manufacturers cut their POs with the component manufacturers. And then the component manufacturer in turn got scared, cut their own internal production. And then Shimano's factories were closed for 2 months and there was a bike boom. So it's just like a double whammy.
Yeah, you know? Of course. Everyone's playing catch up now.
Yeah, exactly. And they're still not at full capacity. Yeah. So it's going to be a very challenging time in the cycling industry for at least the next 18 months, I suspect. And we're trying to navigate it as best we can right now, but it's tough.
Yeah, I can imagine. What are the aspirations then with both personally and with Ventum moving forward?
So with Ventum, I want to become one of the bigger brands in the cycling world. Not sure exactly what that means. I can't say I want to be top five or top 10, but you know, I think we still have a long way to go. I think in triathlon, people know Ventum or have heard of Ventum less in cycling and less in gravel. And so I'd love to see us have a world tour team at some point. But yeah, it really established this as a global leading brand. That would be my aspiration. And then we're doing it differently, right? We're doing it differently than the others have. Yeah. And I think me coming from a background other than cycling has helped kind of think outside the box and implement things that just haven't been implemented in the past. So and we can get into those if you wanted to or not. But that's kind of what I want to do for Ventum. For me personally, I'm trying to find a balance. I have a really hard time with balancing my life.
Right.
I have no moderation. Zero.
I read that actually. I do very little research, but I did do a little bit of reading. And I read an interview where you said I'm either 100% in or I'm just out. I just don't do it.
Exactly. And I could be 100% in and out several times in a year, but I can't like, I'm just going to work, 8 hours today and I'm going to go for a 2-hour ride.
Yeah.
That's not possible for me. I'm either going to ride 8 hours or I'm going to work 22 hours.
Yeah.
But it's not, and that's something like, I think it's my biggest, asset and my biggest fault.
Yeah.
Right. Is I can push so hard, but I can't moderate. And so my aspiration going forward is moderation and being able to be consistent consistently moderate. Yeah. So at any given time, I could be 190 pounds, or honestly, last year I got so fit, I was 158 pounds.
Wow.
And at every given point, so I could be 158 and really like chasing KOMs on Strava, or I am 190 and I pulled 3 all-nighters in a row at work. Yeah. And, you know, and so, you know, again, if I could find a little bit more of a balance, I think that would be a good thing for my life and all the people around me.
Yeah, I'm sure that drive and commitment has helped get you where you are today, because, you know,
absolutely,
people often say you've had it easier, you've got this, or you've been fortunate again, but actually they don't see the hours of work you've put in behind the scenes to in order to be where you know. You spoke briefly about how it's been a very challenging time and how you've wanted to quit on several times, but you haven't. You've pushed on through it. So I think it's nice to highlight the hard times, not just the good stuff. Because people might just look at Ventnor Racing and go, "Well, you know, Deere makes an absolute fortune, $3,000 for an entry level bike. Wow!"
Right.
But it's a very niche market as well, isn't it? I suppose.
Exactly. No, you're right. It's interesting. It's interesting. You know, you just reminded me of something that I want to touch on, which is social media.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you just said like, "Oh, Deere must be doing so well," and this and that. I'm pretty open. Like, whenever I come on a podcast or a TV show, whatever, I'll answer every question very honestly. But one of the things I found interesting recently is that, you know, I call social media the best 10 seconds of my day. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Right. And unfortunately, it's got its benefits, but the reason I post is because I own a business and I have to promote this business in one way or another. And I love my lifestyle and cycling, and I want to share that with the world. And I hope everybody gets on a bike. That is true. But what I've noticed is, you know, well, obviously I'm not going to post a picture of me scratching my head at my desk, right? Or you know, tearing my hair out.
It's
or,
true.
Yeah. Like, you know, bad news all around and or staring at Excel spreadsheets. That's what I do most of the day, but that's
how refreshing might it be though for somebody to turn around who is quite influential in social media to just turn around and go, "This is what I'm doing. Look, I am literally sat doing a spreadsheet. Oh no, I've had bad news. This is going to be a bad month. You know, this is the reality of owning your own business and trying to break into this sport and everything else that comes with it."
I totally agree. Now the issue is, like, you know, if you're Google and you're a huge established company, you get to do that.
Yeah,
but if you are a small, mid-sized company, that probably will raise more doubts with your consumers of your existence, right? Yeah. So, but what I wanted to point out and what I wanted to make sure that people kind of take away from is that we all go through challenges, right? We all go, there are days where it's very hard for me to get out of bed, right? Because of all the crap, excuse my language, I'm going to be dealing with, right? And you know, and people don't see that on social media. And they come down hard on themselves, right? Like, well, look at this guy. Look, he's traveling everywhere. He's riding his bike. Oh, the sunset is so pretty. Look at the food he's eating. Well, that's just one view of this person's life, you know? And I don't know how I got on this tangent, but when, you know, it's interesting. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with people recently saying, like, guys, like, social media is marketing. That's what it is. It's people marketing themselves. When you're marketing, you know, Volkswagen's going to market their newest car, they're not going to market the fact that their diesel engine wasn't up to what they were saying it was, a gas mileage. Like that's, you market the good and you hide the bad.
Of course.
But I think a lot of times people forget about that and they look at Instagram or Facebook or TikTok or whatever and say, man, my life isn't great. And look at how great everybody else's is. And that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
Very, very dangerous. And I don't know, me personally, I've had my own company for 8 years, a nonprofit here in the Northeast. And sometimes you're so busy trying to almost firefight and just survive that you're unable to work on the other things that would help you thrive. And it's very hard to get out of that cycle. It does take a lot of hard work to be able to go, actually, I need to manage this effectively. And because I'm a bit like, I'm all over the shop. I'm about 100 mph. Or I just have to sit down and go, I'm not doing it because, to be honest, I'm not interested. I just don't think it's going to work. And I can't be bothered to commit the time to it. And then there's other times I'll be like, okay, let's do it. And I do feel like people don't see the whole surviving part and just trying to make ends meet before you get to the thriving part.
It's a very good point. That is very true.
get lost in the moment, don't you? Lost in the moment.
Yeah.
But, is there anything else you'd like to add, dear? Because I could genuinely just sit and listen to you talk all day.
Oh, well, that's so nice. No, I'm just excited. I kind of want to come over and hang out. You know, I'm you mentioned the London Marathon. I'm signed up for it. So
oh, really? Fingers crossed it goes ahead this year.
I was signed up for the 19, and they pushed me. I'm sorry, to the 2020, and they pushed me the October, but it's October 3rd. And so, and Kona's October 10th. So it's going to be, I don't know, I'm signed up, but if I make it down, I'm going to try to do my best to come up there and see you guys. When is that half marathon you were talking about?
It's usually in September. I'll try and find out. I'll let you know. I think it's usually towards the middle of September. As I say, it's the biggest half marathon in the world. It is absolutely huge.
I would love to see that. I would love to participate.
It's amazing.
So yeah, let me know. Send it to me when you can.
Yeah, definitely.
But other than that, if anybody has any questions, anybody that listens to this who wants to reach out, I'm on Instagram and I answer every single question. And whether it's about life, cycling, running, love, whatever, I don't care. You know, I'm happy to.
Okay. And what would your one piece of advice be to somebody then? It doesn't matter if they want to follow in your footsteps, whether they're starting a business. Just what would your advice be to someone who was looking for a bit of motivation or looking for some direction?
Nobody knows what they're doing. So always remember that. Nobody knows what they're doing fully, including myself. Every day is a new day. And I think the biggest barrier of entry to people chasing a passion or a dream is that they look at someone who's better than them, who has done it. And they look at it and say, I don't have what it takes. These guys know everything. Oh, this guy went to Harvard and he's got his PhD and he uses these words I've never even heard of, right? And therefore he is way more equipped to do what he, you know, whatever it is that I'm trying to do. He's doing it. I will never be able to do it. And that is the biggest advice I can give anyone. I figure it out every day. Bill Gates figured it out every day. You know, sure, we have more experience maybe than I have more experience starting a bike company than someone who hasn't.
Yeah, of course.
But it doesn't mean I have it all. I have all the answers and I have it solved. And so you know, that's part of believing in yourself. But and again, it goes back to what I was telling you about social media as well, right? Because you look at social media like, oh, this guy does it so much better. No, this guy's still figuring it out.
Yeah,
or this person, this girl, this person, whatever, is still figuring it out. So that is my advice. You know, if you believe in it and you think that this is something, whether it's running, cycling, a business, don't let others or the perception that others are portraying, you know, stop you.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. Dear, I just want to say thank you so much for your time today and for coming on Hobby of a Lifestyle. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. And I hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Hobby of a Lifestyle. Stay safe, stay well, and we'll see you next time.